tchotchkes. If somebody doesn't know what a spittoon looks like, where we can have a little mini version of a spittoon.
Yeah, they're going. Everything is going.
Yeah.
All right. Begin in 1 second. I have a world that I want to do today. A world of world. Okay. Mark, 1 second. You want this back?
No.
You know what this is? This has to be from 1978. And the Center for Jewish Media, I have no idea what that's about. Selling the Seder. I'll talk about something right here on Tuesday night at the book launch. This I'll give you back. I don't have a need for it. But first of all, we can begin. Today is Monday morning, Erev Reish Chodesh, Cheshvan, Mar Cheshvan, Minik Yisrael, October 31st, 2016. Beautiful week in Yerushalayim, and I say hello to all the wonderful students in front of me, and to all the many listening across the world. Rabbi Dr. is my student with all his titles. It'll take a whole hour. Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, who was my student a number of times and remains a student all the years. He says, I always used to mention the old-time Orthodox Jews with spittoons. So if no one knows what a spittoon looked like, this is a spittoon. It's exactly the spittoon we had in Zera Yaakov in the Bronx on Washington Avenue. And men used to go and used to spit in it. And Rabbi, excuse me? Well, no, this is a model, but it was exactly made like this. And Rabbi Joseph Lichtenstein speaks about the battles he fought to get rid of the spittoons. So Baruch Hashem, we've come a long way, but I hate to say it, we have worse problems today in the Torah world than the spittoons for Daila Chakima. And again, I tell this to everyone because people get so upset. Again, I'm not going to mention their terrible scandals right now in Yerushalayim. Two of the most prestigious families of Torah. It happens they're both from the Haredi world, but I don't want to imply that the scandals are only in the Haredi world, but these two scandals right in the heart of Yerushalayim. And people say to me, now the name of the second maneuver has been released and they're trying to work out a plea deal. He's willing to accept 9 years in jail. Could you imagine 9 years what the heck this guy did? But it won't go to trial, so his daughters won't have to testify. The other one, I don't even know if he was sentenced yet, but he's in jail already from the time he was arrested. So people come to me and, Rebbe, what is Torah about? Look at this family, look at this family. So I always tell them, number one, if you've met one or two rabbis in your life who are totally honest, be happy, you've achieved. Yetzalev adam ra minu rav. But number two, and this is a powerful word that I've said many times, but I repeat it in context. They once came over to Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, Rav Henkin, the great grandfather of Nebuch the Karbonot of a year ago. And I don't have to tell you, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was a Gaon Adir, was a Posek Mufak. So they asked him, Rebbe, how can it be that you have kings that were Rishayim and their sons at Tzaddikim? You have kings who would tzaddikim and their sons for Rishoyim. How can that happen? So Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin said, "Nivesved the tatar is nivesved nishved the mamaskiven." We know who the father is. We don't know who the mother was. So you know, you can have a king who's tatar a king, but the wife is off the path. You can have a guy off the path, but the wife is a tzaddikim. So I say, with all these scandals, we know what the yichus is, but we don't know who the mothers were. And that's the way I would approach it. Now, coming back to what we said, I want to make one addendum relating to the blind student, Joseph Vinevsky, who I mentioned in one of my classes. Josh Schneider tells me he was, I should have called him Rabbi Doctor, and he also did 1 year of law school. I knew he had smicha, I didn't know he had a doctorate. His doctorate was on Rabbi Reines. It was published as a book by the Philosophical Library I have a copy. Rabbi Jacob, Isaac Jacob Reines' Life and Thought. Rabbi Renevsky's father, Rabbi David Renevsky, was a scholar and published at least 3 books. He was a Musmach of Vritz 1932 with my great uncle Seymour Turk and Rabbi Moshe Bick. So, all right, I add on the title Rabbi Doctor and I apologize. Another clarification, we mentioned in one of the classes or both of the classes about the Helmetzer Rebbe posing with Rabbi Stavsky, David Stavsky. And I said that the Helmetzer Rebbe was an expert in Eruv, and maybe he was in Columbus checking the Eruv, putting up the Eruv, being machshir the Eruv. So Rabbi Yossi Weiser, who teaches at Ramaz for many, many decades, corrected me. He was an expert in mikvah, and he traveled to many, many communities to build the mikvah, lahakshir ta mikvah. Could be he also knew Eruv, but Rabbi Weiser is right. His expertise begins with mikvah. Okay, now let me just see the corrections. Fine. Before I pick up from last week's shir, Chabad, number one, this Rabbi Yosef Krupnik, very fascinating little story about the Rebbe going to Vilna. But the fascinating story is about RJJ. All of you recognize the name RJJ. He was the second yeshiva in the United States, right after Eitz Chaim. All of us in this room descend from Eitz Chaim. This is why if you wear a Yeshiva University shirt, it has to say established 1886. That's when Eitz Chaim began. RJJ is about 15, 16 years later. Rabbi Jacob Joseph School, named after the chief rabbi. The fact that it's named after the chief rabbi tells you it was established right after he died in about 1902. Now, following World War II, and Yitz and I are only sitting here, Rabbi Rubin and yours truly are only sitting here because of the refugees that reached America. When the refugees reached America, the Shanghai crowd, essentially it was the Shanghai crowd, and they had to find wives for them. Most of them were not married, and once they found a wife, they had to make a living, and once you make a living, what can a refugee, Vasret Nishtavot in English, who doesn't speak one word in English, and has no college degrees, what's he going to do for Panasa? So they were picked up by all the day schools in America. And Yitz, Rabbi Rubin, who was studying in Maimonides in Boston, will tell you some of his greatest rebbeim were those that Rabbi Soloveitchik Moreno Verabenu picked up from Shanghai. If you're familiar with that volume, which Baruch Hashem has gotten fantabulous reviews, it's called, it's named after the first president of the United States. So you'll read how the author winds up becoming a Jew. It's also because of these people. Now, these people were by and large Litvisha, they were Mira, Briska, survivors. They were not inanimate of the Hasidic world. At best, they were tolerant. Most of them were anti. And here's a fabulous story. This person was studying in the 60s in the RJJ school. His name was Yosef Krupnik. He had a study partner by the name of Alexander Stern. And Alexander Stern was a... You knew him? He should live and be well, I hope. No, he's not here. Allah bless him.
Oh, no. His
brother. Okay, Alice. So we can say these two individuals, Shushrein, Sayyim, Vigolam. I don't want to be in a position. You remember I gave a shin Rav Yosef Weiss and you already knew that he wasn't alive and I was saying it's my last Rebbe left alive, but that's life. So Stern had a connection with Brooklyn, with Eastern Parkway, and everyone was talking Chabad, Chabad. So he told Krupnik, look, there's going to be a big Fabreng in it's Yud Shvat. Yud Shvat is the previous Rebbe's yard site. And they also celebrate the ascension to the throne of the seventh Rebbe, although historically it's really a year later. But in retrospect, he already was the Rebbe from 1950 on. Come to the Yud Shvat Fabrengen. And they go to the Fabringen, and they're up very late. It's all night. I know what Fabringens were like. We Charlie, we met a Fabringen? No. Morty? No. All right. Vic, were you? Murray, you were there. Okay.
The one the Reb went to.
You in 1980. Well, that already was in later years, but the Rebbe in his prime, it was all night. So they go to the Fabringen, and the next morning they come in late to class in RJJ. Their Rebbe, this was a very famous name, one of the real giants of Mir, Reb Shaya Shimonovitz, who was one of the real giants left over from the old Mir Yeshiva in Europe. He called them over, Bacharel, why are you late? What's going on here? And they told him where they were. And he ripped the hell out of them. Don't you realize the importance of Torah? You went to Fabringen, you drank vodka, you'd made a l'chaim, you sang, you heard different Torah you didn't understand, and you missed that, and he really let these two guys have it. And they were upset. They loved Rav Shimonovitz. He was a wonderful Rebbe. And why you didn't have a monopoly? Everyone thinks why you got everyone, RJJ, Kravitz and Shimonovitz. They got some fabulous Altamira. So after class, he tells them to stay. And they figured he's going to chop their heads off. And he tells them the following story. He says, you see, Alex knows exactly when to come in. When I quote the criticism and how they were told off about going to the Fabringen, he's not here. But now that we get to what the Rebbe, what Rav Shimonovitz tells them after class, Baruch Hashem, Alex is here. So what happened was, he tells them, look, the Rebbe was in Berlin. And suddenly, the seventh Rebbe, the Rebbe to be, Rebbe Menachem Mendel, we'll call him the Ramash. The Ramash was in Berlin. And this is true. And his father-in-law, the Rebbe, the Riatz, would occasionally contact him to go on Shlichot, to do certain things. So he's in Berlin, and the Rebbe tells him he has to go to see Reb Chaim Moshe and bring him this placard that the Lubavitcher Rebbe wants to publish, and he wants Reb Chaim Moshe to sign with him. So he goes to Vilna, and in Vilna he comes into Reb Chaim Moshe's shtibel, and he's told he has to wait because Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich is in talking and learning, asking shailas, talking about Hashkafa with Reb Chaim Moshe. So he's waiting, and in the anteroom there are other Litvisha there, and they see that he has a Hasidic beard and he has Hasidic payot, and same Fashtanim, they understood that this person waiting to see the Rebbe Menachem Mendel Schneerson is a Rebbe to be, is a Chabadnik, big Yechis Hasid. So they started asking him questions, one question after another. And then Reb Chaim Isa comes out, and he invites him in, and he says, I heard they were shooting questions at you, and you didn't answer anything. And he says, what were the questions, Reb Chaim Isa says? And he asked the Rebbe, and Reb Chaim Moshe looks at him, no, what would you answer? And the Rebbe to be reels off fabulous answers one after another. So finally Reb Chaim Moshe says to him, and Baruch Ber is sitting there the whole time, Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich, Abranovich, Rosh Yeshiva, these aren't, with all due respect to Ritz Kolel, to Gris Kolel, it's not Rav Asaf Bednash and Aaron Rakefet and Reb David Miller, this is Reb Chaim Moshe, and Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich sitting there. And Reb Chaim Moshe says, no, what would you have answered? And he reels off fabulous answers. So the Rebbe to be, Reb Chaim Moshe says, so why didn't you answer? He says, look, they were there to criticize, lekanter, to argue. I wouldn't have accomplished anything. What am I going to fight with them, argue with them? But all right, the Vilna Rav, Reb Chaim Moshe, asked me what answers I would give. I'm obligated to give answers. When they finished their business, Reb Baruch Ber turns to Reb Menachem Mendel and says to him, come and study with me you'll be the Gadol Hador, the greatest Rosh Yeshiva in Lithuania. And Rabbi Menachem Mendel answers, with all due respect, my allegiance is to my father-in-law, and that's where I belong. So it's a little beautiful story on the Rebbe goes to Vilna. I'll make it available. If anyone wants it later, you're free to take it. But it captures the Rebbe as a young man caught up in the, I would say, the 200-year-old conflict of Hasidim versus Litvakin. And I'll come back to this, if not today, in the final lecture on the Rebbe.
There's a video interview with, I think, the person in the...
Yeah, it comes. It comes from video. It's Chabad what they're doing. Okay. Now, in Yonah Diyoma, what we spoke about, if you recall, the football game, what was it, football, and they're putting on tefillin that miracles should take place and their team should win. So you think with the Chicago Cubs, this now is a news item, and the Cubs won. I mean, let's not minimize it's going back to Cleveland. They won, they just won. It was Baruch Hashem. I'm very happy for Baron Lichtenstein's memory. I hope they pull off the miracle in Cleveland. All right, so now the Cubs are back in the World Series for the first time since 1945. Maybe they'll win the World Series for the first time since 1908. Rabbi David Kotlarsky. Now, David Kotlarsky, this is one of the most unique Chabad families. The head of the Shluchim, I believe, is his father, Rabbi Kotlarsky. It's a very famous name. And he's the Chabad Shluch in East Lakeview, Chicago, which encompasses Wrigley Field. No, last week was Sukkot. But the crowds are coming, Wrigley Field, the playoffs, what's going on? And he took time out with his mobile sukkah. You ever see a mobile sukkah? They have a car, and the car is schlepping a little, what would you call it, a truck, a trailer. And on the trailer is a sukkah, and he wore a silver jersey with Chabad printed on the front, and Rabbi David with the number 18 on the back. And with lulav and etrog, and fans mobbed him to come up and shake the lulav and the etrog. And again, the question comes up. They shake the lulav and etrog. They pose for a moment's prayer. Some of the fans said, "Go Cubs!" And again, the question comes back. Do we do the mitzvah that the Cubs should win? Or do we do the mitzvah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu tziva otano? And you all know, we spoke about it, no Chabadnik is that stupid, I believe, who will tell you, because we put on the tefillin, we're going to win. But they view it, we have a chance to get people involved with tefillin. Whether or not the Yankees win or lose, maybe once the person binds the tefillin on his arm and his forehead, it will become permanent. Okay, and now let me pick up where I left off, a very important shayur today with something very unique and innovative. Okay, if you recall, last time we spoke about the whole messianicism conflict, and I said very simply that, in my humble opinion, Chabad owes David Berger a vote of thanks, because there's no question that there was extremism and this talk of Godhead, I don't even want to repeat it, and people putting up the Rebbe's picture next to the Aron Kodesh. And because David Berger spoke out, in my humble opinion, it made some people stop in their tracks. But nevertheless, I want to make clear, as one who knows thousands upon thousands of Chabadniks, the rank and file of Chabad is not messianist. And look, you can feel in your heart the Rebbe should have been Mashiach, the Rebbe could have been Mashiach. You all know we discussed at length the Gemara in Sanhedrin and the two Perishim of Rashi and Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik's viewpoint and Rabbi David Feinstein's viewpoint. And in my humble opinion, we don't have to argue, time will tell, but the rank and file of Chabad goes ahead doing wonderful things. The shluchim are totally in the hands of non-messianists, the people directing it. It doesn't mean that all over the world you won't meet a shaluach or someone who claims he's a shaluach, because you got to remember, Chabad has become a symbol, a signature, a trade name. And technically, you should only open up a Chabad shtibul if you're sent from Eastern Parkway, if it's delineated to you, delegated to you. But, gentlemen, it's a free world. When Chief Rabbi R.J.J., one of the first great Talmid Chacham to be brought to America for the purpose of organizing Torah in America, Chief Rabbi of the United States, Chief Rabbi of New York, within a week, there were two, three other great Rabbanim claiming the title Chief Rabbi. In America's America, they asked the Muscovy Rav, who had a sign up, Rav Wiederbitz had a sign, Chief Rabbi of the United States, I think on Canada. And they asked him, who made you Chief Rabbi? He said, the sign painter. And that's America. So Chabadnikim, I know in Florida, there are many Chabadnikim. Some are official, some a guy who once studied in Chabad, has a beard, has the Chabad look, the Chabad hat. He's a messianist. He wears the Chabad messianic medal. He carries around a messianic flag. No, you can't stop them. It's a free world. But by and large, in my humble opinion, they walk, they're normal, and time will tell, time will win out. And I'm in favor, I'm a betting man, I'm going to bet that 100 years from now, the messianicism issue will be way, way behind us. And the normalcy and the shluchim and all the good will be way, way ahead of us and with us. I have to tell you, I was castigated on both ends after expressing my opinion. Why you Torah? A question has been posted for you by Yudi Cohn. Please pardon my departure from your viewpoint, but your portrayal of messianics is incorrect. When I myself was investigating the matter of Sein Yechi after Gimel Tammuz, I consulted with Rab Leibel Groner, the secretary of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He told me personally he does not say Yechi, but that he does say Yechi HaMelech, because that is the version he heard from the Rebbe. And what can I tell you? My closest friend was Leibel Groner's nephew, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Tzvi and I were bosom buddies for generations. And I knew Leibel very well. And I went to visit Leibel in the United States. I needed bodyguards to get me in. Leibel is under lock and key for fear that the messianists are going to assassinate him. Right or wrong, it's well known. So you're telling me Leibel was a Sed Yechi? I don't know. I experienced different. But, and then he goes on, some of the leading Chabadnikim are messianics, including Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsberg, two members of the Crown Heist Beitin, and Rabbi Yehuda Kalman Malozal, the former Av Beitin. And he rips me apart for being so liberal. On the other hand, I just spoke this morning with one of the outstanding Chabadnikim, whose book I will quote momentarily. I invited his wife, my Talmidah, long before you were born. Don't want to say it in front of her. I invited her to come to shir this morning, so my wife just called me to tell me she doesn't want to come because she thinks she'll be the only lady here. And I see I was right. I told Malka, don't press her, because I'm not certain the light of the Watson family will show today. Okay, so she didn't come, chaval. But David Eliezeri, who's not Stama Chabadnik, this guy is the first Chabadnik to be on the board of governors of the Jewish Agency. That's not a small position. And David Eliezeri, will quote him shortly. So David Eliezeri told me he disagrees with my last lecture. He's furious with David Berger, because he says, David Berger, he says, these godheads in the Chabad movement, these are not Chabadnikim, these are mentally ill people. Yes. And he tells me the person, remember I told you a story, I told off Alex, because I suffered. Bespitsky, remember what I told you? Levi Yitzchak, this is my family. It's Revel's family, Rabbi Revel's family. And he was, that family, the Bespitskys, Azay Edel, Azay Fine, no idea. And he was killed. So he told me, he didn't die right away, he suffered for about a year. And Lo Aleinu, hit by a car, and he tells me that Leibel told him that this guy is lishmarcha, he was mentally ill, all right, mentally ill. So I get told off on both sides that it's not even a miut, he says. You shouldn't even refer to David Berger. It's not even a miut. I said a miut shena nika. I used halachic language, and he says it's mentally ill people. So my dear students, I got my face smacked from one side, my face smacked from the other side, and I'm very happy to have a smacked face. And I don't have to defend myself because I'm not certain I'm right either. I say, give it 50, give it 100 years. We'll look back together and we'll see. But I've lived long enough. I've been around for 3,500 years. And I always notice that smoch al am Yisrael, im lo neviim heim b'nei neviim heim, normalcy, greatness, Torah wins out. Okay? I can be wrong. I went out on a limb. I told you I'm never going to discuss Belined. I'm not going to discuss Open Orthodoxy anymore because to me they're neoconservative and there's nothing to argue. When you go over there, I'll talk Tuesday night. I'll have something very important to say and you'll understand me very well. But okay, maybe I'm wrong. I see there was a whole article that there's right-wing Orthodoxy, there's YU Orthodoxy, there's Chovevei Torah Orthodoxy, and all of them are legitimate spectrums. All right, maybe I'm wrong. We'll see in 100 years who's right, who's wrong. Now, what I'm saying, I have to say, David Eliezeri says exactly the same thing. And I know David Eliezeri quite well today. His book, The Secret of Chabad Inside the World's Most Successful Jewish Movement, is fabulous. It's a bestseller, and it deserves to be. It's not a biography of the Rebbe. The three biographies we spoke about, each one has its niche to play, its role to play. This is more an evaluation and an explanation of how Chabad works. So if you take his book, The Secret of Chabad, which just came out now, there's a second edition that was just published with an index. I have the original edition in front of me. But David, beginning on page 324, Rabbi Eliezeri, he explains, which we all know, that as the Rebbe became older, Jews, Chabadnikim, would ask themselves, what will be? And many found comfort in the thought that in every generation there's a potential candidate for Mashiach. No one represents these ideas better than Mashiach. And perhaps the Rebbe is Mashiach. And David quotes the Rebbe, and I showed you sources, that the Rebbe himself was opposed to this. The Rebbe told them not to claim he was Mashiach, not to sing these messianic songs. And once the Rebbe died, the issue became, of course, more real, more tangible. The Rebbe is gone. We spoke about worried about suicides. It's a very interesting study. Maybe one day someone will study the period from the time of the Rebbe's final stroke to the last 2 years when he finally died, and how the New York Police Department was worried, how it was handled by psychiatrists, psychologists. But one thing is certain, the Rebbe is dead, and any speculation about Mashiachism and the Rebbe has to be put aside, and Chabad has to decide how to go further. And here too, he makes the point, and this is a point that we alluded to, that Kol Zman, the Rebbe was alive, whoever surrounded the Rebbe was never challenged. The authority came directly from the Rebbe. You can mention names for the sake of argument, Rabbi Mordechai Chodakov. He was the Rebbe's right hand. He was the right hand of the Riatz of the previous Rebbe. And he was a very interesting individual. He was not a secluded person, a college graduate, a man who had a very broad vision from Riga. When he died, three people became very, very close to the Rebbe. Reb Leibel Groner, who to a certain degree became the Rebbe's right hand. You will never see the Rebbe walking into a Chabrenian or dealing with people or giving out dollars without Reb Leibel Groner standing right next to him. His brother was from David Itchegroner, who built Yiddishkeit in Australia. And they were big lamdanim. David Itche was a posek, a lamdan mufak. These were not stam chabatnikim who had frumkeit not learning. They were on a very high level. Then you have Rabbi Klein, you have Rabbi Krinsky. I believe Rabbi Klein is no longer alive. It's Rabbi Krinsky who's still alive. Correct me if I'm wrong. And they worked hand in hand with the Rebbe. Following the Rebbe's death and the explosion of what I call a miyatanika of the messianicism, the central authority was challenged. And the Rebbe was no longer alive. So it's not that they could say, what do you want out of me? It's the Rebbe who appointed me. And particularly, you got to give credit to Rabbi Yehuda Krinsky, who reorganized Chabad. It's what I said a few weeks ago, months ago, maybe last year, that with the Rebbe's death, the organization became much firmer. They recognized they no longer had the halo of the Rebbe behind them or over them, but they had to be much more structured. And this reflects in every aspect of Chabad. You can't become an official shluach unless you're approved. It is totally normal people running the shluchim. The conferences for the shluchim, the shluchat, each one is a gem. I mean, you can watch it online. I once said about, there once was a movie, Three Weddings and a Funeral, if I'm, am I quoting it correctly, a British movie. It was a very famous movie, Three Weddings and a Funeral. So I remember one year I said in the Kollel, I just attended a wedding and a funeral. Everyone looked at me. I said online, I participated in the Agudat Yisrael convention. It was a funeral. Everything is horrible. Everything is terrible. Yamach shmambas run. Why you this and everything? And then the Chabad kinus of Shluchim and then the Shluchat, which a month apart, I couldn't believe the upbeat, the positivism. And believe me, I am in the positivism camp. If you read that book I gave out yesterday on Kopelman and see where I grew up in the Bronx, and here's a boy who went to my schools. He's 10 years older than I am, 15 years older, but he went to Solanta and he went to MTA. How he grew up and what came out of him, you'll understand why I sit here and I'm on the Chabad camp. Take me to a wedding. I don't want to go to funerals. And you got to give Rabbi Krinsky all the credit. And here I want to ask Rabbi Rubin, do you remember Rabbi Yehuda Krinsky? Graduate of Maimonides. He was a Bostonian. His father was the chief shochet in Boston. And the Rav told Rabbi Krinsky, a quiet but determined individual. He acts. You can't shake him up. He once told Rabbi Eliezeri that Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the renowned scholar from Yeshiva University, had been a close friend of his father, who had been the chief shochet in Boston. Rabbi Soloveitchik had provided the shlachtos with his kosher endorsement. He once told Yehuda Krinsky, quote, your father was a stubborn and resolute person. Your parents decided from the day of their wedding that if they have children, they will grow up to be observant Jews. And this was at a time where such determination didn't generally succeed. Krinsky carried on the family trade of tenaciousness. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Tenacity. How do you pronounce it?
Tenaciousness.
Tenaciousness. Thank you. I know what the word means, but I never used it. Unwaveringly, he carried out within the resolve the mission which the Rebbe had entrusted him, ensuring that the central institutions Chabad were not compromised after the Rebbe's death. And now, I want to come to the high point of today's Shavua. Gentlemen, where do we differ than Obama, Clinton, maybe Trump? I hope not, because what's happening in America is if this isn't divine intervention, I don't know what is. And they say it's going to be worse, that more is going to be revealed. It's unbelievable. And the head of the FBI, I mean, you have to understand what's going on here. It's these are not small matters. And it shows you that there's no real democracy. Power is power, power is power. And you can't exactly criticize Putin, because take a look, America, Ministry of Law, whatever they call it, Mishpatim, what's the technical words? Justice Department versus FBA, Department of Justice. Don't snitch on me. I don't want to get into trouble, Mark. I have enough problems just being a good Jew in Jerusalem. Now, well, I shouldn't say that. It's a pleasure to be a good Jew in Jerusalem. I have enough problems getting to the smachat. A grandson just got engaged. So thank you. Erev Yontif Sukkos, he gave her the ring at the Kotel. And Erev Sukkos, he came to see us. So first of all, we were in a state of shock because I have various families. And this family, English, is not a high priority. They're totally integrated. And the girl's English is better than mine. When I heard her life story, her father is from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Her mother is a Persian Yerushalmi family, graduate of Rothschild. And this lady is a lawyer, and she's fabulous in both languages, can write contracts, English, Hebrew, Ulpana graduate. What a lady. But now the problem is she's from Zichron Yaakov. Her father works in Haifa, Intel, PhD, high tech, the usual story. But he and his wife felt Haifa's not a place to raise children. So they chose Zichron Yaakov, which is about 30 minutes away from Haifa by car. And it's a very nice, frum community there, a lot of Anglos. No, the engagement party is in Zichron Yaakov. So my problem now is, how do I get from Jerusalem to Zichron Yaakov and get back and survive the trip on a Thursday night? So, all right, I got enough problems with that. Let Trump and Clinton be. Now, I want to ask you a question. I began a talk on Rosh Hashanah, first of Rosh Hashanah, in a shul in Palmach, Rehov Palmach, a very erudite audience. And I raised the issue, why Mankiyot, Zichronot, Shofrot, and I'll come back to this, but not now. Why is that uniquely Jewish? Because if you're a Talmud of the Rav, you'll recall the Rav's classic Yom Kippur, Yorim, Shuvah drushes, Yahrzeit drushes. He always spoke about the timelessness of the Jewish people. And for us, the past and the future are more important than the present. In that sense, we're very different than contemporary Western civilization. All that counts for Obama, for Merkel, the present, the now, the here, the tangible, they couldn't care less about the past, and they're not concerned with the future. You know, the debt that America has, every child being born is born into a debt of tens and tens of thousands of dollars per individual. All right, it's a very big difference between Yiddishkeit, our way of life, and the general concepts or the Western concepts. Going back to Zichronot is so important. Habenya Kirili Ephraim, Leich Teichacharei Bamidba Be'eretz Lo Zarua. Going forward, Uvi Yom Hahu Yitaka B'Shofa Gadol Uvo Odim Be'eretz Hashu Anidachim Be'eretz Yisrael Shtachavu Lashem B'Hahakodesh B'Yerushalayim. It's a different human being. You're walking in the present, but your whole concept, lifestyle, emotion, logic, intellect, you're a totally different person. And I want to tell you, when I visit Yeshiva University in New York, and I've gone back a few times, I walk into the auditorium. All right? So, for the sake of argument, who here has never been in the auditorium? Murray, have you been in the auditorium? Why you? So you've been there. Who hasn't? What's your first name? I can't hear? Eitan, have you been in the auditorium?
Yeah.
So when you go into the auditorium, what do you see? You will walk in this morning. Okay, let's transport ourselves right now. The middle of the night in New York, we open up the door, we get the key. It's locked all the time today. It's a different world. In my days, it was always open. It's empty. Empty. Right or wrong? I walk into the auditorium. I start to shiver. I start to shake. I cry. Because I see my Rebbe giving the Yad Zeit Drasha. I see every seat filled. Yitzchak understands me. I see every seat filled, standing room crowd. It's the 1950s, when there was no Kavarat Torah in America yet. When there was not the Frumkeit binge of today, which is good and bad at the same time. And I see the Rav, 4.5 hours. Ah, oh, what that man gave. What that man gave, the halacha, the brisk, the akada, the philosophy, what that man gave. Ah, oh. And then when I recall that, I cannot be a bad Jew. I cannot do a sin. Not that I'm a tzaddik. Not that I don't have freedom of choice. I can't sin. I cannot sin. Period. I get a shaila. Whenever I get a shaila, I think, what would my Rebbe have answered? I understand. Who am I? What am I? See, that's zichronot. And if you have zichronot, then you can have shofrat. Because you want to pass it on. This is Torah Shabbal Peh. The whole concept of Torah Shabbal Peh is that you have to have a Rebbe. It's an amazing thing. Everything could have been written down. Everything, you have 25 books instead of 5 books. There's no halacha, you have to read the Torah once every year. Anyone here who's a lamda knows, there's no such halacha. My grandsons don't like, they don't like long, the Israelis don't like long davenings. My grandson was just in Baltimore, different grandson, he married a girl from over there, they brought him back, the grandparents didn't want to see my great-grandchild, my Eyal. We think he's a genius. He's turning one soon. Great-grandfather says, hey, that my great-grandson is a genius. All right, take it as you wish. So my grandson comes back. He tells me, a lot of the youth doesn't like to daven. They don't daven shabbos. They're not from. He says, no, they're from. But they work hard all week. They don't want to go to shul at 9 o'clock and come home at 1 o'clock. So I say to him, let them make a hashkama minyan. The rabbi doesn't let them. The rabbi is foolish. Believe me, Rabbi Golden and Rabbi Przanski, they're the smartest rabbis in the world. Make a Ashkama minyan, make a Sfadik minyan, make a Dot HaMizrach minyan. And there's one rabbi in the shul. All right, the rabbi runs around a little. You should make it a point once a month speak at each minyan. You follow? So they know there's a focal rabbi. But they don't want to daven too long. No, who says you'd have 25 books of the Torah? We'll take 50 years, a 49-year cycle to read the Torah. How long did they read the Torah? No, there was a whole machlokes, Babylonia, Eretz Yisrael. There was a 1-year cycle or a 3-year cycle, right or wrong? No, this is this is the way we do it. You have to read the Torah every 3 days. Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, fine. That's the Gemara in Baba Kama. It's the Takanit, one of the, maybe the oldest Takanah on record. Shelo Yilchu B'nei Yisrael Shel Shayamim B'li Torah. Fine, I gave shirim on this, it hurts me, it's before the internet, before the recordings, I gave wonderful shirim on the Rav, and I wanted to come back to it, but I decided to do the history of Torah in the United States. So, this is, if you have memory, then you have a future. Then, write it down. No, God wanted a Torah Shabbat Peh so that Mark Wiener should meet Aaron Rakefet. So that Aaron Rakefet should meet the Rav. You know how I begin my talks in Israel? Thank God you're a bunch of morons. That's why I'm standing here. So the whole audience jumps forward. Gee, this is great. The guest rabbi is calling us morons. He's a moron. No, I said, I'm not joking. Had you elected Rabbi Soloveitchik, chief rabbi of Tel Aviv in 1935, I wouldn't be standing here. I'd be a medical doctor, whatever. I hope I'd be from. Even that I can't guarantee. I hope so. But then, oh, then they start to think, boy, this guy has a point. He has a point. That's Torah Shabbat. That's what that room reminds me of. That's memory. My dear friends, Chabad did something that no one else in the world has come up with on the level of Chabad, and it absolutely works at this moment in time. I underline the word moment, you'll see why. 770 became a trademark. You now have replicas of at least the outside of 770 all over the world. Think what I'm saying. Now, you know what this means, a replica? Think about Chabad. If you went out for Brengen, Jews came from all over the world. Jews flew in from Australia. Jews flew in from Israel. I think Chabadnikim may have been the first to work out the concept of a chartered flight from Lod to New York. I don't know if they were the first, but they certainly are among the earliest, where they chartered an entire plane. You chart an entire plane, the price is much cheaper. Right or wrong, El Al makes a certain amount of profit. Let's say in each flight today they make $500,000. If you say to them up front, we're going to give you $500,000, give us the plane, fine. Then you divide it up among all the people, it comes out much less than people buying tickets on their own and all the commission involved, etc. No, the Jews came to 770. Look what went on there. Torah, Chassidus, Mesirat Nefesh, the Fabrengen, the Rebbe, the singing, the Lechayim, the Kuntresim, the Achnasat Ochim, the entire experience. It's like Rakefet, Ani Rothkoff, walking back into Lampert Auditorium and seeing the Rav, the atmosphere. Ugh, what a feeling. What a feeling. What a memory. I had a big foot. If you look into Washington, there's the greatest picture that anyone has and anyone will ever publish of the Rav. It was the last Yahrzeit Shir in the Beis Medrash. I date it. You know, I took that picture. I don't know what happened to it. Long since forgot about it. When my mother died, we had to go through Zichrona Livracha 5 years ago already. We had to go through the unpleasant task that many of us, lo aleinu, have gone through, the older people here, of cleaning out the house. My father was gone, my mother was gone. It's also a delicate question. Someone just asked me, when a spouse dies and the survivor's already 80 or so, do you go to a senior citizens? And the advice I got from my own students who were psychologists, psychiatrists, leave your mother where she is. If she can function and she wants to remain, don't move her. She's going to live longer in friendly surroundings. There's something to think about here. So believe it or not, when we cleaned out the house, I found the picture. Too late to put into my book on the Rav, but just in time to put into Washington. Think about that picture. Look at it. The Rav, right in the middle. And you can see in the picture, see if you can find Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, and see if you can find Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. If not, I'll show it to you who they are. What a picture. What a memory.
You should blow it up.
Well, I have it in the book. I have the picture. I got to get Ichdafke invite them. You know, I'm busy doing my own things. Ichdafke invite them. But you're right. The picture of YU, I should maybe... again, public relations, YU, in my time it was B'nai Terah, Sam Hotstein. Today I think non-Jews are working there. So go and explain to them what the picture would say. Okay. So important, the memory. 770? Wow. Okay. Now, the Rebbe said, I'm quoting the Rebbe now, I don't know whether he originated the idea. I'm going to give you a source in a moment and give you a little bit of the history. I don't know if he originated the idea. But Chassidim came to him. Rebbe, we'd like to build a replica. He caught on. He encouraged it. You'll see, one shaluach was very close to the Rebbetzin, Chaya Mushka, who's, again, one of the sterling people. If I can interrupt for a moment, I spoke about this book yesterday. It's the first copy to reach Israel. I highly, highly recommend it. Rav and Rebbe by Rabbi Chaim Dolphin. He's the one I quoted yesterday about Shlomo LeKalbach. Prefaced by, I don't know who this guy, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet. All right. It's a very, very fascinating volume. And he writes about the Rebbetzin of the Rav, the Rebbetzin of the Rebbe. It's a fabulous volume. I don't agree with all his, I don't have time now, but like he does a whole analysis. Was the Rav a Briska, or did he leave Brisk in favor of Chassidus? And he tries to say the Rav moved towards Chassidus. I told Malka last night, I would describe the Rav, the cake was Lithuania, Brisk. The chocolate icing was Chassidus. That's my.
The neshama was Chassidish, and the goof was.
I like my mushel better because.
It's not accurate, though.
Please, in Brisk there was a neshama too, in my humble opinion. But have it your way, Alex.
It was very concealed.
Alex, you can have it your way. But I like the chocolate cake. My wife loved it.
A Brisker cannot write the books that you wrote. A halakhic man could never write the halakhic man.
Have it your way. You're the expert in philosophy. The Rebbe bows to you. Nevertheless, someone who knew the Rav intimately, I sat here. The Rav sat here and I sat here. You know the pictures. They don't... Right, the Talmud class, but that was the main class. When all is said and done, everything else was a sideshow. So my feeling was he was Brisk, but there was beautiful chocolate icing. That was Chassidus.
Well, why can't you use your own term?
Harmonious coexistence. Because I think he was...
His grandfather,
Alex is right. His grandfather couldn't write these type of svarim.
He had a very appealing...
Yeah, no, Beseda, what Chabad seemed, right. No, he had a feeling for Chabad, and there's no two ways about it, Rav Chaim, and Rabban Soloveitchik, who I was an intimate friend with the Rabbi, I was an intimate Talmud, with Rabban, I was an intimate Talmud Chaver, underlined the word Chaver, Rabban, no question about it, Yomo, wake up and don't be an anti-Chassid. The Rebbe,
he's a
Kalina Chassid, I know. They came, we can't win, Charlie. In today's world, you're looking at a dinosaur, an old Litvak, surrounded Baruch Hashem by Chassidim. Okay, so they went to Chaya Mushka, and she asked the Rebbe, and she said, the Rebbe will be very happy if you build a building like this.
Now,
I'll tell you, you'll hear in a minute, relax, Yitzchak, the Rebbe is far from finished. But I want to ask, so what did the Rebbe say? The Rebbe, very ingenious, exactly what I said 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago. He said, not every chassid can get to 770. It's expensive, but someone from Kfar Chabad gets there once. It's back in Kfar Chabad. When he looks at the building in Kfar Chabad, he then thinks about his whole experience at 770. And there's memoir literature coming out today. The Rebbe encouraged the Chabadnikim who got out of Russia. I just gave a big package to Yomo to give to Rabbi Lubavsky, who was born in Kharkov and his father was a prisoner of Zion and teaches here in this building. And I gave him a big package of memoir literature in modern Hebrew. In other words, that's my problem here. Whenever I give out something in modern Hebrew, no one takes it, which is a very sad comment on what's happened because of Schottenstein. But beautiful memoir. And one of the books I gave you, the memoir, this was a Jew who suffered so under the communists. And finally, by miracles, they got out in 47. They claimed they were Polish citizens and they were able to cross the border and they had forged papers and they got to a DP camp, an American DP camp. It's a magnificent volume, Halavai. It would have been written when I did my work on Silva, because he was in this DP camp and he describes Rabbi Silva's coming to the camp. And he meets with every faction of the Frum people there, and he meets with the Chabadnikim, and he says to the Chabadnikim, "I, Rebbe, your Gepolt mit Mesirat Nefesh, your Rebbe acted with Mesirat Nefesh in Russia, and he's acting with Mesirat Nefesh in America today." And this Chabadnik writes, "No one knew what Silva was talking about. Why do you need Mesirat Nefesh in America? It's a free country. It's not Russia where they're going to shoot you and kill you and exile you for being a good Jew." He didn't understand the Mesirat Nefesh it took of the Riyats to start what he started in America against all assimilation. What we're up against, the Chicago Cubs, the Jews are dancing, Theo Epstein, a Jew built the Cubs team, a genius from Boston to Chicago, a Jew, Epstein, married to a Catholic woman. You understand? This is America. The President of the United States, Bill Clinton, his daughter marries a Jew on Shabbos, and the idiot is wearing a tallis with a mug and davit around. Oh my God, you should have put on tefillin on Shabbos, gone to chuppah with tefillin with the mug and davit. What we're up against. Takes Mesirat Nefesh from the Rebbe. And this Jew describes how he comes to Kfar Chabad finally, penniless, and he struggles, and he works, and he puts penny to penny together. And finally, the early 60s, they charter a flight for Yutet Kislev, and he goes to America for the first time. And what it meant to him every moment in Yutet Kislev at 770, every moment he recalls, and what it was to see the Rebbe and to hear the Rebbe and to drink l'chaim to the Rebbe and to have the Rebbe say l'chaim. You know how it was at Chabad. The Rebbe would hold up a kosher bracha and he would look and look at each one, l'chaim, l'chaim. You have it on video clip, it's like, l'chaim, l'chaim, l'chaim. And everyone, he'd be looking here, 500 Hasidim, right? Everyone would swear the Rebbe's looking right at me. I mean, you have to understand, to be a Chassid, with this feeling, I cry that I'm not a Chassid. In this book, he quotes what I quote from the Rav, which I heard the tape with my own ears in 68, Yudket Kislev in Hanukkah, in Boston, right after the Rav lost his mother and his brother and his wife, where the Rav breaks down and cries, Halavai, Chab Givena Chassid, Vadachagayinson Rebbe. I would go to the Rebbe and the Rebbe would take away part of the pain from me, part of the sorrow. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, when he looks at the facade at 770, the building, all the memories come back to him. This is Zichronot. You see, Aaron Rakefet has gone one step ahead of the Rebbe, and I'm putting it into the context of Malkiot, Zichronot, and Shofrot. And the Rebbe hits the nail on the head. It is genius. Now, before I give you all the sources and answer Yitzhak's question, very important. My dear students, Ani Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu, even if I don't want to tell you how old I am, everyone around me, all my friends, every week, this Nichama Vela, that Nichama Vela, with colleagues, students, God have mercy, Menvet Delta, Big Shu Chachamim Lignos at Sefer Kohelet. They didn't like it. I didn't like it. But boy, when you grow older, you find out Kohelet hit the nail on the head. He was right. So if you recall, a number of weeks ago, I had a bad incident. My wife broke a foot, and we didn't know what would be. We were in the hospital, whatnot, and had to cancel the classes. Now, this is very difficult because I have more students outside than inside. So do me a favor. Anyone who's in this class, write your name and your email number, and I give it to Sherry so that if I hope I'll never have to cancel a class again, but if I do, we should be able to reach you. Yomo, pass this around. Give it to anyone who's not on on this list for today's class. Add your name and your email number. Take a look at the list. Yeah, Yitzchak, I'm going to ask you a question in a minute.
I found your lecture today very, very meaningful. Firstly,
I haven't said
in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Right, okay. Well, wait, come here, say it to the microphones. Well, wait, I'm going to be, say it to the microphone.
When every autumn, I would travel to New York to listen to the Rav's Tshuva Drasha.
Right.
It took 2 hours and a half to get there, it took 2.5 hours to return, and to sit for 3 hours. Then every year, Tshuva Drasha was water in Yiddish. Then came the Yortzeit Shir, and the Yortzeit Shir was 3 hours. Again, to drive,
right.
To drive, and to listen to it, and to take notes.
Right.
Then came the Yortzeit Shir for his wife, which was in English. So 3 times a year, I was forced by my conscience, or you want to say,
right.
By the Shabbat.
Right.
Hear
so you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Rabbi Rubin is certifying the words of the Rebbe here, and the Rebbe in Eastern Parkway, that the concept of recalling the Zichronot Leich Teich Acharai Bamidba Be Eretz Lo.
Right, so half the seats and not three-quarters. With,
right, there were signs up, remember?
Was there, a chair,
a hat, a svarim, a notebook.
So it, you're lucky if you could find the scene.
Right, right.
And then you're, after all that, finding the apartment place, finding the scene.
Right.
And then the scene, and then the most dramatic part was to finish the halachas part. Take off his glasses.
So the game.
I say, should I continue or retire?
Say it the way the Rav said it. Soll ich gehen weiter or mein Zeit schon mit? And the audience, Rebbe, weiter. Now I have to tell you, as someone who observed the Rav, I can't do much in my life, but that, at least I know how to speak. I don't know how many of you have heard me give a drasha, but I observed the Rav. I know, ich ken de malacha. So I can tell you, the Rav taught me. When he would say Zalich Gein Vaita, he meant to go Vaita, but he had many points of exit. You understand? He explained to us, and I once spoke with him privately, you exit when you feel you've made your point, the audience has heard enough, you don't have any more koach, but you exit in a way that no one knows you're leaving anything out. You follow? So when he got up to speak, he could exit the halacha. You can't exit so easily because you have to end off with the answers. But the agada, the machshava, you could exit many different places. It depended upon the way the audience led you. And he was a masterful speaker. In this book, he, again, you have to read the book with the footnotes for a Chabadnik who never went to graduate school. He did a very, very thorough job. I enjoy this immensely. So you'll see the footnotes. He quotes time and again my insights. What I got from the Rav, it's unique. To watch the Rav, to have seen him, the audience, the interaction, the sense of humor. He would confuse many times when you're speaking in public, your mind runs ahead of your mouth. So he would be giving you shiur, let's say, Kiddush and Havdalah. And suddenly he would say Kiddush when he meant Havdalah. So from the audience, people would yell out, Rebbe, Havdalah, Havdalah. Oh, he would break into a big smile. Oh, good. Very good. I wanted to see if the audience was still awake. You understand? He had a sense of humor. Very, very fascinating. In the 50s, he had a temper. There's no question. The 40s into the 50s into the early 60s. And then, of course, what life does to you, the temper already was minimized. I would say the temper disappeared. It's a fascinating, fascinating study. Okay, I'll take questions, and then I want to go further.
What do you mean by the temper disappeared? temper? Like, I imagine when he always gave fear, he was always very...
No, the temper is very... If you saw the documentary I brought into the world, The Lonely Man of Faith, it's all in there. But the Beit HaLevi, they say, had a temper. They didn't tolerate fools. You understand? Reb Chaim, exactly the opposite. The Rav was more like the Beit HaLevi. Reb Baron Soloveitchik was more like Reb Chaim. You understand? Reb Moshe was also with a temper, but not as bad as the Rav. The Rav was more genius, more pronounced. And there's a recording of the Rav in Moria, where the Rav said, you know, he was told these were his friends, Moria. It's all the Rabbonim and the Balabatim. These are his buddies. So he says at the end of the show, I don't know how it came in, how it fit in, but he says, yeah, he says, I know I have a temper. He says, I'm trying to take lessons how to control it, but I haven't succeeded that much. And the place breaks into such laughter. I'll give you an example of a temper. Here, he's in, and this is in Moria, where the Rav is giving this whole, at the end, he's talking Parshat HaShavua. This is all recorded, by the way. One day it'll all be written out. And the Rav says, I'll say it in English, I'm sorry. Don't try to correct me. We built Torah in America, we built Yeshiva, the Lithuanians succeeded, but it's not Hasidim who succeeded. This is the early 50s, mid-50s. So a Hasidish Jew says, Rebbe, was meint men? What are you talking about? Look what's going on in Eastern Parkway, right? And the Rebbe shoots back at him, don't bring me such a proof, he says. Bring me nicht azar raya. He says, where do your kids study? They study with me in YU, not in Eastern Parkway. He shoots back at him. And then the Rav says, nein, ich weiß. You know, then he calms down. He says, yeah, I know this Hasidus. It's not the Hasidus I knew at home of the poor Jews. Their whole life was around the Rebbe and Hasidus and the mikveh. He says, here they're normal citizens. All right, the shtickle Hasidus here, but not like the Alter Hen. But he, you know the story. In class, when you said something that kicked them off, the famous story, a student, this happened many times, a student said a svara and the Rav jumped on him, and then the Rav looks for the student 2 hours later to apologize. I thought it over and you're right. There's the classic story, he's still alive, should live and be well, from 1941-42. There was a student, the Rav Shir, Rabbi Solomon Maimon. Does anyone recognize the name?
Solomon
Maimon.
That's also the name of...
It's the name of from the Haskalah period. Yeah. No, that's not the... we're 200 years later.
Right.
Solomon Maimon. So he was... you see from the name, he was Eidot HaMizrach. So he's sitting in the Rav Shir. This is classic. It's an absolute true story. I heard from people there, but everyone knows the story. I told the story in front of Rabbi Maimon. He kissed me. I couldn't believe I knew the story in Seattle. He's the Rabbi Emeritus of the Svada congregation in Seattle. Maimon and all these Svadim in my time, I studied with Katzin, the chief rabbi's son. You follow? They all had to learn Yiddish. They were one of the boys. No one, you know, they davened with us. They spoke Yiddish the way we spoke Yiddish. They had to learn Yiddish. They had no choice. It's not like today in YU, a Sephardic division, Ashkenazic division, everything is in English. So Maimon gives a svara, and the Rav jumps on him, to play this via Turk. How do you say play this in English? You're speaking foolishness like a Turk. Why? There's one version, a drunken Turk. And the class breaks into laughter. And the Rav, what's Lachman? The Rav is ready to explode. What are you guys laughing at? He's an idiot, you know? Play this via a drunken Turk, a shik a Turk. Right? So the Rav, they say, Rebbe, he is a Turk. And he said, and the guy came from Istanbul, and the class was, so even the Rav broke into a smile, as they say, Nitzchuni Banai, Nitzchuni. Now, one second. This concept Yitz asked a good question. So I want to tell you, Yitzchak, on everything there's research. On everything there's research. There's a ketav eit called Dot, a periodical called Dot. It's issued by Bar Ilan on Machshevet Yisrael. 2015, Bar Ilan University, Dot, there is an article on the 770 Eastern Parkway concept of building buildings with the red stone that bring to mind the unique building on 770. If I can make an analogy, I don't have to go further than the Ungva Rav, Reb Menashe Klein, who we speak about Sunday. Those of you that have seen his base Medrash in Borough Park, all of you know that on the outside of the Beit Medrash, on one side is a replica of Kever Rachel, on the other side is a replica of the Kotel with Israeli stones. How many people have seen it? I mean, next time you happen to be in Gullis, go to Borough Park and look up the address. It's in the heart of Borough Park. It's worth looking at what the Ungvar Rav built there. I'll give you another example. I don't know if it has a name. Ungva. I don't know. It's no big deal. Open up one of his firm downstairs. Maybe it tells you in the introduction or in the copyright. I know where the shul is. Again, I know Borough Park, but not that well. I think it's on 50th and 17th on the corner. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong by a block or so. It's a site. I'll give you a better example, recent example. The fanciest neighborhood in South Florida is Bal Harbor. You've heard about Bal Harbor. Joe DiMaggio lived there, so that should tell you something. A lot of Jews live there, and it's the biggest Chabad shul probably in the world. It's right on Collins Avenue, the main drive. It's called the shul. Sits hundreds, maybe thousands. They're expanding it today. Within the shul, there's a shul that the rabbi brought over from Poland. So you have an ancient little shul within the big shul. And they are a powerhouse. Those of you who are up to date, last week Ivanka Trump spoke in the shul. Sat in the little shul with the rabbi with microphones and videos, and every seat in the shul was filled. And afterwards people were shouting, Ivanka for president. She made a fabulous presentation, dressed of course very sneeristically. Very nice, very nice. No. You have a Chabad shul like that. So I told you the story a year ago, 2 years ago. My friend emigrated from Woodmere to Bal Harbor. A dear friend, MTA graduate, Jackie Grund. Jackie was unhappy in the shul. The davening began at 9:30, ended at 2 in the afternoon. Everything was centered about the rabbi. He spoke 4, 5, 6 times every sedra, parsha, aliyah, drasha. And this guy is sitting next to Jackie, and Jackie gets to talk to him, and Jackie says he's wearing a black hat. I may have been wearing, I don't know what else. And the guy says, where do you live, Jackie says. And the guy tells him he lives 25 kilometers away. And he says, well, where do you stay when you come for Shabbos? He says, no, I drive. And Jackie said, oh my gosh, couldn't handle it. So they went around the corner and they organized in a store above a bank, a little shul. Bal Harbor does not have poor Jews. And last Hanukkah, they dedicated a $12-13 million shul around the corner from Chabad. Not the competition, but people have a choice. Chabad only gets bigger, it doesn't matter. they announced a $20 million campaign now to expand the shul. And now you go around the corner, it is a beautiful, beautiful shul. It's the most beautiful Young Israel in the United States, Young Israel of Baal Harbor. The first public lecture given there outside of their own rabbi was by a guy named Ani Rothkopf / Aaron Rakefet. That was last January. The outside of the shul, the inside of the shul, endless stone from Jerusalem. So that Rabbi Rakefet could get up and say, here I am in a shul in Baal Harbor with stone from Jerusalem. I look forward to the day when I will be davening in a shul in Jerusalem with stone from Baal Harbor. But what's the purpose? To remind you who you are, where you come from, where you are going. The first to build the shul looking like 770 was 1985 in Kfar Chabad. And that's when the idea began. The Rebbe paid for most of the building, and this was the ability of Chabadnikim, of Rebbeim. We don't have that ability. Could you imagine if someone came to me with a great idea, need $1 million to pull it off? No, where are we going to get $1 million? I had a miracle with that documentary that I did get $1 million, but that's because my wife's grandparents davened in Abe Lebovitz's father's shul. It's a miracle. No, the Satmarov, $1 million. He tells the gabbai, I need $1 million by 4 o'clock this afternoon. The gabbai makes 2-3 calls. 4 o'clock that afternoon, $1 million changes hands. It could be it's in cash. That's a different story. But $1 million changes hands. You follow me? The Bava the Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe. I told you I was at the funeral. So at the funeral, there were tens of thousands of people outside. But right next to 770 in one of the homes they owned there, that's where the body was taken out of. I see people walking out, about 50, 60 people, among them a friend of mine. So I asked him, why, what are these people? They're not great Rabbanim, they're not great Rashi Yeshiva. These are people who gave the Rebbe a minimum of $1 million a year. Understand? So a minimum. And imagine the Rebbe says, look, his gabbai calls, the Rebbe needs $1 million for Kfar Chabad. It's there. And at the dedication of the shul, listen to the words, V'hein yoknim et nishmatam v'koach hashpa'atam mehabayit asher b'New York. And you see that whole concept comes to mind, that the Rebbe already understood, when you build a house like this, you remember New York, you remember 770, you remember the Rebbe, you remember the Fabrengen, you remember what Chabad essentially is all about. Remember, we're all caught up in life, and Kfar Chabad, they work for a living. It's not that everyone sits there and learns. Go and see what's going on there. This type of work. People go to Tel Aviv to work. People travel elsewhere to work. But a moment, pause. You see the shul, you see the outside, you see the facade. What memories it brings back. Now, there's another factor involved. That shul was built 1985, 1986. This is right after the tremendous battle over who owned the library. Remember, we spoke about it in great detail last year, 2 years ago. Who owned the library? And finally, the court ruled that it's owned by Beit Agudat Chasidei Chabad. It's owned by the organization of Agudat Chasidei Chabad. Why? Why is that so important? It's not individually owned. It's not that the Rebbeim owned it on a personal level. It is the property of the totality of the Chasidei Chabad community. That's why the Rebbe's nephew had no right to take books and sell them. the Rebbe insisted that the house 770 they're building as a Hasidic center in Kfar Chabad, the ownership, Beit Agudat Hasidei Chabad, Ohel Yosef Yitzchak Meir Lubavitch. You follow? Stressing it's not a personal matter, but that it's Agudat Hasidei Chabad. They own what we have in New York, and they own what we have in Kfar Chabad. It is the totality of the Chabad community. And here I have to pause and say this is totally different than any other Hasidut. You'll take Satma, the heart of the money, the wealth, the glory, is the Satma Rav. That's why there's so many fights in Hasidus, because when a Rebbe dies, these Rebbeim came to America penniless. When the Satma dies, when the Bavav dies, you know what's going on in Bavav? Tens of millions, billions of dollars. Unbelievable what's happened after World War II. And Chabad, very different. The ownership is the collective ownership of the community. The second Beit Chabad, which I've been privileged to see the first, the second, Los Angeles. And Los Angeles is the story of Rav Shlomo Kunin, first cousin to someone you know, Yitzchak, Barry Liebman's first cousin. You follow? Barry's mother and Shlomo's father are brother and sister. It's a first cousin to Barry Liebman. They go back to a very distinguished Kunin family, which were among the Kunin family, the Liebman family. They were among the supporters of the Riatz when he came to America. And the Kunin family, one of the contributors to the buying of 770 in 1941. Okay? That's the family. So Shlomo Kunin is the one who was very friendly. This family was very friendly with both Rebbetzins, the previous Rebbetzin, Dina, and Chaim Mushka. And they, Reb Shlomo, turned to Chaim Mushka and asked your husband. And he answered, she answered, I quote the answer, Yesh Sfiat Ratzon Gedola Mikach She Yesh Chiba LeBeito Shel Abba, meaning the Riatz, the original Rebbe who came to 770. My father will be very happy if you build a 770. It's built on the main drag right next to Beverly Hills, the main street. What's it called? Anyone remember the main boulevard, Wilson Boulevard? Not Wilshire. It's Pico Boulevard, right? That's what it's called. It's built on Pico Boulevard. The third Beit Chabad, which I have not seen, is in Milano, Italy, and there the Milano, Italy. You have to remember, those were the first shluchim, among the first shluchim that the Rebbe sent out. And that's the Grelick family. And this is a family, came to Milano, had tremendous success. The family is there until today. And they built the building in 1994. And this whole concept that Judaism could thrive in Milano, so the Shaluach's wife, the Shlucha, tells a story that Mashiach will one day come, and he will come either through Milano or he will come through Melbourne. And she used that story, therefore we have to build a Beit Chabad that he should feel at home, because they're all imagining, I would say, that the Mashiach will come either Milano, Melbourne, from there go to 770, and from there go to Israel. So let's get Mashiach ready. He should find the building. He should know what it looks like. He should feel at home. But I want to ask you, and she repeated this story many years, and then they finally built, the Rebbe already was gone, but they finally built in Milano. Tell me, what did the Rebbe mean by Milano and Melbourne? What did the Rebbe mean? very simple. Who would ever believe that Judaism could thrive in Milano, Italy, or Melbourne, Australia? And those are two communities where the entire structure is due to Chabad. Melbourne is infinitely bigger, and there's something very unique about the Melbourne community. How many of you have been to Melbourne? It's a Zeram Pin. It's a replica of Israel, of what's going on in the world in miniature. You have Hasidim, you have Miknagdim, you have Ungarisha, you have Lakewood, but it's the one community in the world that is multicultural, multifaceted, and everyone gets along. And that's to the tremendous credit of Chabad. You want a story to prove it? Yours truly was a guest of the community in the year 2000, and I'm being given a tour Shabbos morning. I already spoke. Our davening is over. I'm a guest of the Mizrahi in Milburn, and they're giving me a tour of the community, and they show me this shul, that shul, the Sakma that are there, and they show me the Lakewood Base Medrash. And I walk into the Lakewood Base Medrash, and what greets you on the portals? Dedicated by Harav Yosef and Shterna Gutnik. Shterna is my student. Yosela Gutnik, you all heard the name. I say to you, Yosela, you gave money to Lakewood. They defame Chabad, you know that. And Yosela says to me, yes, I asked the Rebbe, should I give money and build this Meis Medrash? And the Rebbe told him, Adarabba, the Adarabba. How do you translate that? Absolutely. 100%. That's the fourth Beit Chabad, is in Melbourne, Australia. Unbelievable. One after another, 1998. And you hear he quotes in this article from the talks that were given, and it was not only Chabad they brought over when they set the stone for the building. A stone from Yerushalayim and a stone from 770. Again, you see the interconnection here. Zichronot and Shofrot, the future. The fifth such building, Sao Paulo, Brazil. The sixth building, you can all go see today, right here, Ramat Shlomo, Yerushalayim. The seventh building, Buenos Aires, Argentina, dedicated on Kristallnacht. And nothing could have been more meaningful. Kristallnacht is in a week and a half, less than a week. A week and a half. Nothing could have been more meaningful. Because Buenos Aires was basically built into a community with survivors who got there during World War II, after World War II, and dedicated Kristallnacht. And I want to end off this little article with a Maimon Chazal, Megillah Daf Chaf Tet Amud Aleph, Atidin Batei Kinisiyot Batei Medrashot Shebabavel Sheyitpu'u the Eretz Yisrael. And that's a fabulous Maimon Chazal. You can find it also in the Midrashim. The concept is the same. The wording is a little different. That's the way Chazal put it in Masechet Megillah. And halavai, we should see all these shuls with the stones of Jerusalem, with the facade of 770. Halavai, we should be zeicha to see Sheyalu Atza. And I want to end off with Divrei Torah. I often ask the question, what are they talking about? Sheyipahu, Sheyalu. What are you going to do? You're going to rebuild the shul? It's going to cost more than building a shul from scratch. And you want proof it'll cost more? Go to Ranana. There's one shul which they brought over block by block, stone by stone, wood by wood from South Africa. A Talmud, a graduate of this kollel, is today the rabbi there, right or wrong? You all, Rabbi, one second, Shapiro. Schreiber, Rabbi Schreiber, studied here in this kollel. He succeeded Rabbi Bella, my dear student, who died so young, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Danny Bella. Danny Bella studied with me in the kollel, in BMT. I don't believe he studied here in the kollel. But Rabbi Daniel Schreiber is a graduate of the kollel. He was our student right here in this room. And that shul, everything is in English, everything rebuilt, pictures of what the shul looked like in South Africa. They brought over South African laborers and put them up in a hotel in Tel Aviv to build the shul. They didn't trust the Israeli laborers. And how much did it cost? Maybe 4 or 5 times what it cost to build it from scratch. But they had money, South Africans, and they wanted the memory of what was. It combines the zikronot with the shofar that lead to the malchut. It is magnificent. So halavai, the day will come when we will be zeicha. But you see, this concept of 770 all over the world, it keeps Chabad alive. Of course, there's one question you can ask. Rebbe, you go into Lampert Auditorium and you recall what will be in 50 years when there won't be anyone alive who can recall the Rav there. Chabad, yes, there's so many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people walking around who experienced what was, but they won't be here forever. This is a wonderful question. No one can give a black and white answer. But take a look, Breslov is alive and kicking, not always in a normative fashion. Chabad is alive and kicking, and Rakefet claims as time moves on, the more normative they will become. My dear students, to reiterate, thank you, what an audience I had today. I want to tell my virtual students, and what can I tell you, if I'm to judge, I walk the streets and people jump on me and they kiss me, hug me, and tell me over Torah I said, so they can't be lying. But I have to tell my virtual students, you are only virtual students. The big difference from a Rebbe giving his shiur to people he doesn't see, although I see you, I am a bit of it ever myself, it rubs off on you, but there's a big difference from giving his shiur to the eyes of the students in front of you, and I thank you for your eyes that are filled with Torah, Yirat Shemayim, and appreciation. That's why God has kept us alive. We should go further in strength. Now, what did we do today? All right, we dealt with normativism, messianicism, poor Rakefet gets it from the right, gets it from the left, and I don't have to defend myself. We'll see. I don't say I have a monopoly on truth. We'll see, 50 years, 100 years, it will play out, and either I'm right or I'm wrong, but I think I've presented a logical, sincere position. The concept of 770 is very powerful. This cannot be denied. And we are not that smart. This building was built, we should have told Mr. Gross. I had no power then. I was a kid. I played the role at the end. I pull off a miracle, but that was a miracle. It's not, how could a little kid from the Bronx convince a multi-billionaire to give this campus to Torah? But okay, Mr. Grush should have built this building, some maybe, I don't know, with the turrets of Yeshiva University, something to remind us where we came from and to thank God where we were at. Now, coming attractions, I think one more shiur, more or less, I hope to finish up Chabad, if not a shiur and a half. After that, I'm interrupting, and something just happened. Rabbi Haskell Lookstein gave permission to publish something that Rabbi Joe Lookstein never published about what happened in YU when Rabbi Revel died. And it doesn't give all the facts. The publication that came out is hiding something. So I asked Rabbi Haskell Lookstein's permission to give a lecture and tell what's behind the scenes and what really happened. And he gave me permission. I have a letter here giving me permission. So I'm going to do that. It's very fascinating. I'm going to show you a source from the Rav. Bring it to life. Then we're going on to Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner. those Shayurim are ready to roll. It's not going to take a year, 2 years. He's not the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but it'll take a few weeks. He was very innovative. And that's why I want to do him. He was a unique individual on the American scene. It's not like Reb Moshe, Reb Yaakov, Reb Aaron Cutler. We were all people we spoke about. But he was different. And I want to deal with that. I have something very interesting to say there. And I hope that Talmidim of Rav Huttner are listening and will answer me, either agree, smack my face on the right, the left, Zaman Zayn Gesund. And then we'll get involved with big topic, the history of the rabbinate in the United States from 1902 when it began, the Orthodox rabbinate. I'll bring you into 1960. I can't go beyond that because beyond that I have a prejudice that was part of the picture. But until 1960, I can be a scholar. I can be totally objective. I want to remind you, there's a colored picture on the wall. Tomorrow night, a guy named Rakefet is Hashakat Sefer, I forgot my English already, book launch right here in Gris at 8 p.m. I'm going to present the talk. It should be a very nice evening. I won't bore the audience, but I want to say something that you'll hear it on a superficial level, or you'll understand the very deep level, and you can spend the next 120 years filling in what I'm going to say tomorrow night. Be'ezrat Handel Ten Le'yav Koach. The topic of the talk is a synthesis between Yeshiva University, Gris Kollel, and Kiev, and the star of the talk is a student named Yomo, Yosef Mordechai. Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, some of the freebies. No one took this. It's open. 1999, American Jewish Yearbook. What's very fascinating, though it's 26 years old, is the description of Russian Jewry, which had first, it was the first decade that they overwhelmed the state of Israel. And you have a very interesting article here on Russian Jewry. It's interesting to read it 26 years later and see it in context. And if I can quote Rakefet, no Aliyah so succeeded like the Russian Aliyah. They took the country over, for better or for better. It's amazing. Wherever you go, they own the country. Who would ever dream? And you know what's amazing? All their world-famous politicians are all Shomrei Shabbat. Some have kippot, some don't, but they're all Shomrei Shabbat. This is a Michlala publication in memory of Rabbi Yehuda Kuperman. It's very interesting. I knew Rabbi Kuperman. We knew him as Yukel. Rabbi Yehuda Kuperman knew him very well. There's a picture of him as I knew him without a beard. You won't recognize him. But here's what I throw at the challenge. This is a display at Michlala today on great women in Jewish history, modern history, more or less. And I looked at it, and there's one part of the display that Rabbi Kuperman would have a conniption. And it shows you Michlala has shifted some gears. Let's see if anyone can come up with what the Rebbe is talking about. Is anyone here a historian? I think this is for Alex. Philosophy. It is a master's thesis at Brandeis University on Mendelssohn, Wesley, and the move towards modernity. If you heard my lectures 20 plus years ago, I spoke about it in class. This is Chabad interviews with Chabadnikim and how the Rebbe influenced their lives. Very fascinating. Rabbi Yitzchak Arnold, could you remember? Imagine Rabbi Yitzchak Arnold, he must be named in my honor, Arnold Rothkopf, Rabbi Leibel Wolf, Rabbi Pinchas Feldman. If anyone here is a baseball fan, or if anyone here is mad at Rakefet for talking about baseball in Teirat Hashem Tamima, here is a sermon by a grandson of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he talks about what we can learn from baseball.
Right? Say that for next week for Michael.
For Michael, I should say. So I'll give it to you. Will you see him in shul?
No.
Okay, give it to Yitzchak for Michael. And here are two copies of Contact, which I cry, billions of dollars being spent to create Jewish identity. This is the Steinhardt Foundation. They are so distant from Torah, don't they understand, without commitment to God, to Shabbos, to Kashrut, to Tarat Mishpacha, what identity will we have? This past Tamori, please, it's the latest Moment magazine. And here, my friends, is a classic. It's beyond words, the money wasted. This is against the Israeli army, that they're daring to have Haredim going around looking to get Haredim to come into the army. And you can't believe the effort put into this. But what can I tell you? God has wrought a miracle. We have a state of Israel. We have an army. We have wonderful Jews living here and wonderful Jews who are waiting online to serve in the army. And let me end off with the Haviyuvda. My grandson became a Mach. I think I told you this yesterday, and I was at the fallout ceremony, and hundreds and hundreds of new Machim of Fakdei Kitah, maybe 500, 600, tens of thousands of people there. They need a stadium. Latrun is not big enough. Endless minyanim for Mincha. And I looked around at the soldiers. I was there a long time. Minimum 60% with kippot. Every type of kippah. Every type of beard, every type of peyot. And what I told you yesterday, in Imodel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, many students of mine, parents who came over to me and said, Rebbe, we're here, and you played a big role in bringing us here. And their sons were becoming makim, along with my grandson. So we can't fight, we can't yell, we can't shout. It's a process. Be'ezrat Hashem, we are living part of the Shofrat. Halavayit will enhance the Malkiyot. My dear Talmidim, until we meet again in health and happiness next Sunday, Reb Moshe Feinstein, relating to Shlomo Lo Kalbach, we should only have Besorah Tovat, Yeshuat V'Nechamat. I want to wish my dear student Mark a pleasant trip back to the Gullus of Chicago. Das V'Danya. If anyone wants to know about where to get this book, as I said yesterday,